So good morning, everybody. It's Sunday, just after 9 o'clock. Lizzie and I are here for this latest installment of our Third Space coaching project, Turning Towards Life. We are absolutely delighted to be here with all of you, those of you who are joining us live, and those many people who join us later in recordings and hopefully very soon in our podcast as well. So welcome to all of you. We have a fantastic source that takes us in a whole other direction this morning, which is Lizzie's choice. So morning, Lizzie, I'm going to hand over to you.
Morning, Justin. Morning, everybody. Thank you for joining us. We have a source about no reason this morning, and about joy and love and laughter. And I chose this source partly because we were prompted by somebody who watches us to maybe talk about this topic, and it was such an interesting prompt for me. I don't know about you, Justin, but my journey in my life has been one of finding a way to access the depths more deeply, when joy has always been very, very natural to me. So to be pointed out to that, oh, hold on, I've watched lots of your videos and there's not much about joy and laughter and all those things, is a really interesting thing for me, because it's like, oh, how come that has happened? That's really interesting to me. So I'm really grateful to be speaking about this, and it's one of my, I think, natural essence somethings, is the kind of joy and humor and laughter that I bring into the world somehow. And so in terms of sources for this, there were so many to choose from. And when I read this one again, because I've read so much of Hafiz and love it so much, I felt like this was a good one to bring somehow. So Justin, are you happy if I read and then you read?
Of course.
Okay. So, And For No Reason by Hafiz, translated by Daniel Ladinsky. And for no reason, I start skipping like a child. And for no reason, I turn into a leaf that is carried so high, I kiss the sun's mouth and dissolve. And for no reason, 1,000 birds choose my head for a conference table, start passing their cups of wine and their wild songbooks all around. And for every reason in existence, I begin to eternally laugh and love. When I turn into a leaf and start dancing, I run to kiss our beautiful friend, and I dissolve in the truth that I am.
So here we go. This is And For No Reason by Hafiz, who I think is one of the great poets of joy and of love. And this is in translation by Daniel Ladinsky. And for no reason, I start skipping like a child. And for no reason, I turn into a leaf that is carried so high, I kiss the sun's mouth and dissolve. And for no reason, 1,000 birds choose my head for a conference table, start passing their cups of wine and their wild songbooks all around. And for every reason in existence, I begin to eternally laugh and love. When I turn into a leaf and start dancing, I run to kiss our beautiful friend, and I dissolve in the truth that I am.
I love this thing we have where we both read it, because it's like, you get to receive it in such different ways when we read it ourselves and then someone reads it to us. Yeah. And I noticed as you're reading it, the kind of the thing that the poem is about begins to arise in me. And I can find this kind of, what I experience is a great joy behind my eyes that kind of starts to beam. And it's a very, also a difficult thing to kind of talk about and even be analytical about, I notice. because it does have no reason. It is a kind of unreasonable joy that emerges, certainly in lots of my everyday. And the things that have this happen are like really ordinary things, like walking along a pavement with nothing on my agenda, but just going somewhere. And suddenly I'm like, I can feel the joy. And it lands unexpected, uncultivated, you know, in some ways. It's like, it's not even a, it feels like a natural part of being a human being. And of course, there's ways to consciously access it. But what I appreciate about this is it's like laying out the possibility that there doesn't have to be a reason. There doesn't have to be some diligence. There doesn't have to be some something. It can be, you know, a robin landing in front of us, or the blossom falling, or the way somebody makes you a cup of tea, or the way somebody dances along in front of you. I'm just thinking of the children, like sometimes the little skips have this feeling of joy in them that's completely translatable into my being. And so I'm just appreciating this no reason thing. And I think so much of the time there's a diligence about me, like, oh, what am I practicing? What am I reading? What am I? And that's also so very important, but this realm doesn't feel like it's a realm of something that we have to work hard at. You know, it's like, it's there. It is to be present and to observe and to be in the world somehow has this opportunity in it just naturally without us having to try, if we've been laid down the possibility for this. And I think that's what Hafiz does in this, is that it lays down the pathway to the no reason joy.
For some reason, there's so many things I'm thinking about and that are happening, Lizzie, whilst you're talking about this and from reading the poem. But for some reason, I'm thinking immediately about something I read last night, which was actually about life coaching. Mm-hmm. And it was about a kind of coaching that's very different from, I know, the kind of work that you and I do. It was in a piece by Stephen Fry. And Stephen Fry was saying how much he hated this orientation that many people have, people who do a kind of work that they call coaching, which is about you have to have a goal and you have to get there. And he says this absolutely brilliant thing that's totally relevant to this poem. He says, this is so punishing. It's such a punishing way to live. What's going to happen? You're going to have a goal, and you're going to work to get to a goal. And then what? When you've reached your goal, are you done with life? What does it mean you have to have another one, and another one, and another one? And he was pointing out this, the reason I'm bringing it up is he was pointing out this trap that we can get into that makes us very vulnerable to, I have to do something in order for my life to be together. And when I have a goal, I'll set a goal. And when I get my goal, then joy. Except at least my experience has been, is it doesn't go that way. Usually, if you reach your goal, and if it's still relevant, then that's not where joy comes from. Many other things might come from completing something. So that was coming to mind for me. And I think it was coming to mind for me also because I recognize in myself what you were saying about diligence. And I am in a big inquiry about this at the moment, and it's really coming to the front, which is, it's so easy for me to be in the world in a way that says, I have to have a reason to feel joyful. Mm-hmm. And given that very few things meet my standards of the kind of reasons I have, I ought to be more responsible, serious. Yeah. And I'm really used to, in a way, sort of the opposite to what you said. I'm used to hanging around in fear, shame, sorrow, sadness, grief, these are all very familiar for me. And it's why Hafiz is so spot on, because I also know that joy, when it comes, and joy is, I want to distinguish joy from happiness, because I can feel joy in the middle of the saddest moments of the, so maybe we'll tease out what joy is as we go, but joy is not something that seems to come as a result of great effort that I put in, and it rarely comes because I'm, you know, fulfilling my role in some kind of story about who I'm meant to be and how I'm meant to be in the world. Joy is what comes with no bidding from me, mostly when I'm open to it. And the extraordinary thing about it, as Hafiz says, is that so much really deep joy is in stuff that's just right here and happening right around. It's looking into my children's eyes or seeing them sleeping, or it's simply opening the door and seeing, it's a beautiful sunny day this morning, but actually what I'm going to say, sometimes it's opening the door and seeing the clouds and getting a sense of the kind of rapture that's possible from being alive, the being wrapped up in life that can come even when things are very hard and even when things are. Joy is, seems to me, as possible right in the middle of it. Of that. And last thing that strikes me, and this is the for now, which is the Stephen Fry thing, which is we make a big mistake when we kind of go out for it as if we were trying to get something. That move is exactly what seems to make it slip away, because it's something other than that. It's something other than what comes from having finished something or completed something or reached a standard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm kind of making some connections here as well, because in a way, the nature of the way that I experience joy is that I don't sit there and analyze how come I'm feeling it. You know, I haven't been observing myself as to how come. And yet, as you're talking, I'm realizing that, you know, you're speaking about when the clouds aren't parted and the sun's not shining and there's not. It's like, I think you're making the distinction that joy isn't necessarily like a positive thing. Like, it's not everything's fine kind of thing. It's deeper than that. It's got like, you know, I think, I can't remember. I think this is my brother-in-law, Robert, said to me once, he said, pain runs really, really deep, but joy runs even deeper. And in this conversation, I'm feeling that depth. Because I can feel that the kind of happiness that I would have experienced when I was younger, before I had kind of cultivated a different kind of depth in my kind of contact with people and life and inquiry, it was a kind of brittle kind of happiness. Like the kind of, I got the thing, like the goal or something, or things turned out the way that I wanted them. And of course, that's wonderful. And also very fleeting and disappointing in lots of ways too, like, oh shit, you know, I thought that was it and it's not, and feeling kind of repeatedly let down all of the time. And the joy that I think you and I are alluding to, Justin, is the kind of, for me, the kind of joy that arises when I'm in a state of inclusion, that I'm, my nervous system is kind of spread out enough, like melted enough, that I'm in receipt of life. And in that receiving of what's here and what's on offer, and in appreciation of whatever that is, that unreasonable joy has the chance to, and often arises. And hearing music, for example, whatever the subject matter, but that it's coming from somewhere that moves and stirs the passion in me, the aliveness that is me, is also a great joy. So somebody can be singing about, you know, we went to a gig last night and they were singing about divorce. And I just found this deep joy in the articulation of what it's like to be in that hellhole of separation. And so I'm noticing that there's a kind of encounter with the full spectrum of what it is to be human that affords this joyfulness. And it's a challenge to kind of really find the words, because it's not really a kind of explicable thing. You know, the moments when I walk, I remember, you know, I sometimes walk along Charlotte Street, and I remember I've had two moments on Charlotte Street. No one has been there with me, like going to the post office or something, you know, really mundane. And suddenly the joy is like with me. And there are often moments that get very, very etched in my memory as well. Like the deep, joyful, ordinary moments where something has arisen that feels like what it means to have a life that means something to me. And it's not in some kind of meaningful, intense something or other, although I absolutely value those things. But I think one of the greatest joys of my being human is those deep moments of uncelebrated, unnoticed, unreasonable, huge joy.
One of the things I'm catching on to as we're talking is that maybe we experience joy when we catch on to our own aliveness. But that's what's going on. When this is why it has no reason. Like there's no reason why. There's no reason for us to be alive. Many things we can do, but here I am. I didn't do anything to get to be alive. Here I am. When I catch on to that, I'm alive. Or when I catch on to the aliveness of something around me, or like you're saying, I was really struck by this, Lizzie. There was a way in which you're saying when we're open to being reached by life, we very often find ourselves, like Hafiz is saying, this line, for no reason, 1,000 birds choose my head for a conference table and start passing their cups of wine and their wild songbooks all around. It's so gorgeous. And that there's a way in which there's a kind of, well, at least for me, there's a kind of self-forgetting that it's very easy to get into. Like I forget that I'm a living something when I, that's why I love this this repeated line in the poem, for no reason. But the kind of forgetfulness I get into very easily, which I think is what brings out my seriousness and my contact with lots of other things, which are, is, I meant to have a reason. There's meant to be a reason for me to be here, and I meant to live up to the reason, and I meant to have reasons for everything that I'm doing, so that, and this is Stephen Fry's point, this is the trap, so that such and such and such and such can happen. And when such and such and such happens, then I'll be entitled to whatever it is I'm entitled to. But in a much deeper way, like you're saying, underneath everything else, there is no reason. We don't need a reason. We are, in fact, reasonless. Mm-hmm. And there's the tricky thing about talking about this is I'm realizing that it's hard to talk about it without sounding like and without feeling like, oh, if I were only to do X, Y, and Z, then I would experience more joy, which of course just gets us back into the reason. You know, if I were more open, I'd experience this. How can I practice being more open? And these are all really good questions. Mm-hmm. But it seems to me that one of the reasons that this is such an important conversation is that maybe one of the reasons why we're here to bring reason back into it is because of our capacity to be enraptured with life, to be amazed by life, to be in wonder at that any of this is here, and that This is exactly, I think, what Hafiz is saying at the end. I dissolve in the truth that I am.
Yeah.
And so many of our other reasons are, yes, important, but in a way, miss the point if we miss this one.
Mm. Do you know what's popping up now in my memory is that I remember lots of years ago I was reading, I can't remember even what it was, but there was a line in a book I was reading and it said, you know, your problems don't need you right now. Why don't you pop them down to the side and come back to them later? So I remember thinking, oh, that's interesting. Like there's something about having difficulty that you think you have to hold on to it, that I think I have to hold on to it. Otherwise it won't get dealt with or something. I have to keep it present right here because then I'm working on it. I'm trying to sort it out and dealing with it. And almost having permission just to kind of park something so that I can just have a rest for a little while. And I remember the experience of doing that was like, oh, hold on a second. When I put something down, when I consciously let something go for a little while, knowing I can come back to it in a minute, it's okay. It's not going to disappear. I'm not being irresponsible to the point of destruction, which I don't think is even possible anyway. I can experience something different than the cycle, than the holding on, than the gripping into, than the trying to control something, just sitting there on my own, not taking any action. Because I think that's what a lot of us end up doing, is that we're obsessing about something or trying to control something in our minds or trying to sort it out and figure it out and, you know, do the reason thing. And this whole notion of our capacity as humans to actually pop something down and be present is possible. And we can come back to things and we can be in conversation again about something. But it really got me interested in the nature of the personality and the way that our defenses, our controls, our maintaining a self-image, all of that stuff is something we're actively participating in. We have power to see that and to have enough kind of means of self-observation to hold it in our hands, to have it and say, okay, I'm gonna just leave that for a second, see what else is here. What's my being? Who would I be in this moment if I pop that to the side for a second? And in a way, I think that's part of the kind of foundational journey I've found that has brought joy that I didn't know would bring joy. It's not like, oh, I'm going to try and get really joyful now and, you know, put things to one side for a second and experience life as it is in this moment without being burdened a whole lot and 100% by the content of my life, the circumstance of my life. But find a way to be in contact with this one, the I am. What does it mean to be in touch with the I am? And how does that then also allow me to return to my stuff, to the content, to the circumstance with different eyes and a different heart that's been affected by the I am, affected by my spiritual nature, affected by the nature of the I am that is not separate from anything else? And it's really possible. Like, I have found that it's really possible for me to do that. And frankly, to have a rest from all of the diligence and all of the feeling like I've got something wrong or I'm not where I'm supposed to be. And, you know, it's exhausting. And then to know that I can say, right, well, there's a way that I can make a choice to be contactful with myself, to be present. Maybe even contactful with another and put that to the side for a second so that I can see what it's like to be this one. And actually that's what I think my being practice is. My, you know, we talk about doing sitting and just being somewhere. And every time I start my sitting, it's like, can I see what it's like to be this one right now? What's it like to be this piece of being? What is that? And of course, everything creeps in and I resist it and I don't want to do it and la-di-da. But I feel like I have got a way in because of the I am and because of the community that I have of people who have also allowed me the spaciousness to experience that and to cultivate the experience of that and to not believe all my stories about what's going on in my life wholly as who I am. You know, I think I've been lucky enough to have enough people who go, yeah, there's that stuff going on, and who are you? And the question of who am I seems to have been such a life-giving aliveness into difficulty.
I love this idea. So first of all, I notice myself feeling in contact with joy as we're speaking, which is a great delight to be experiencing that as we're talking. And I'm really taken by this idea that that you're bringing in, that so much of what, there's a way in which it's our own resistance that holds us away from this possibility. And I'm being really careful I'm really not saying here, well, if you're not experiencing joy, you must be doing something wrong. There's a whole line of thinking there that's so unkind. But at the same time, I also get that, I certainly recognize this in myself, that very often when I get on the edges of joy, what comes up very quickly is, but I'm meant to be being responsible for this, and I'm meant to be thinking about this, and I'm meant to be taking care of this. And I so recognize in myself, as I suspect that many, many people do, this kind of, I'm going to call it, say it in a strong way, a sort of obsessional attending to my difficulties and my problems and my responsibilities that goes on and on and on and on and on. And that somehow if I were to put that down, I wouldn't be being the kind of responsible person that I'm meant to be, which is to miss that we are also made for joy.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, it seems to me that one of the things that makes it possible is this beautiful move that you're making of setting things aside, which is really a practice in knowing our own spaciousness, that we can hold, we're vast. And yes, it seems like this problem and this difficulty is the one that needs, that's my whole world, but it's a tiny part of this vast inner and outer landscape. And when we set it aside, something else can arise. And two things came to me whilst you were speaking that were related to this. So one was, I know what it is. You talked about children earlier. What young children, children who are cared for, children who have people around them who will, you know, who feel safe. Joy is just ordinary. And then I suspect that what's happened for a lot of us is a lot of times along the way when we were feeling and expressing joy, somebody said to us, not that, you need to be responsible. And I think school is a big deal here. A classroom of joyful children is very often a teacher's worst nightmare. Stop it, everyone. We have work to do. Stop being so joyful. Because joy is, like Hafiz is saying, it's kind of unmanageable. You know. So I can think of lots of times, actually, in my childhood, when for reasons of being diligent, responsible, you know, I learned to put joy aside. We got taught this, the first thing. The second thing that struck me in what you were saying, Lizzie, is the times when I have found myself most open to joy are the times, this may sound perverse, but I don't think it is when I really got that I'll die.
Mm.
When I understand that nothing's ever going to work out in the way that I want, when all of my plans are going to get interrupted, when there is a finite and unknowable amount of time,
mm-hmm.
More often than not, when I actually really let myself feel that, what I don't feel anymore is the burden. What I feel is great joy. I'm like, oh my goodness, what it is to be here, even in the midst of all of these things that I'm worried about.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that joy and our finiteness of us are actually very, very intimately connected. And there's some way in which when we run from our own, the finite limits of our own lives and our own existence, bodily existence, when we run from that, or we try and, I suspect that a lot of my trying to be responsible is a trying to hedge all of that away or something. But that has the unintended consequence of making joy very, 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 very far away. And really facing it, staring right into the truth of it, is also a great freedom to, as Hafiz says, to dissolve in a kind of truth. Here I am. Oh my goodness.
And also, as you're speaking, Justin, I'm realizing that one of the ways that I experience and see it is that we can pop something down and inquire into who we are in this moment. And it turns out that those two things aren't separate anyway. That the stuff that's the content of my life gets to receive the jewels that I bring back, the feeling that I experience in the I am, then gets to kind of permeate into the feeling of responsibility or the feeling of burden or whatever. And the practice of bringing the treasure back from the joy and letting that participate and belong as we cultivate it by allowing ourselves to feel it, it then gets integrated into the rest of our lives, so that we get to, in some way, I don't know what the word is, but like maybe regulate our responsibility with some joy, you know, like to allow those things to be joined together, rather than, you know, I have the serious part of my life and then this joyful part of my life or something. It's like, how do we continually weave them together so that I can find joy in the difficult things, and I can find joy in the things that feel burdensome. You know, how do I stop the washing up for a minute, encounter who I am, and then bring the I am to the washing up? Like, I think that's, seems to me a very it's like joy isn't just for the kind of holidays, you know, it's actually, we can infuse it into our everyday, circumstances, problems, difficulties, and it has its own intelligence as well. It's like the exploration of it and the depth of it is a never-ending path. And of course, it doesn't mean that we're not going to have hardship and horror and terribleness in our world and in our own personal lives and our families. To suffer is to be human. But to have a way of allowing joy to infuse that as well, by being conscious that it's possible, by being open to the fact that it's there, and that we can have real experiences of joy that aren't just, I really don't think joy is to be discounted as a kind of frivolous thing. I think it has deep value, and that it has a quality that gets brought because of the nature of it into whatever else is happening in our lives. And that's part of my commitment, that seems to me a non-negotiable natural commitment to joy, that also allows me to be very resilient. It allows me to be someone who can experience great and deep difficulty, because there's also this something here that I have contact with that helps me come home again in spite of the difficulty of what's happened. And I think that I'm always going to have difficult things that happen, but I'm always also going to have the opportunity, if I remember that there is this great joy available that I can infuse into everything whenever I want. And that's a deep freedom.
This is the last thing I'm going to say. I'm aware of the time.
Oh yeah.
What a thought, Lizzie. that we might. As a matter of great commitment, cultivate our openness to joy in the middle of politics. For example, at the moment, our politics is so filled with other things, fear, hate, despair, judgment. What about joy in the midst of the difficulties of our current political times? Joy in the way that you're saying, joy in the midst of our workplaces. What if including joy, joy in education, joy in our schools, joy in washing the dishes, joy in doing the accounts. And like you're saying, I'm going to keep saying this, this isn't some, I really get that you're not talking about some positive thinking exercise. This is more a kind of opening to something very deep and very alive that can exist right in the middle of heartbreak and right in the middle of being at a music concert and right in the middle of walking the sunshine and right in the middle of loss. What a thing that would be. So I guess we are done for this morning. We ought to stop here. I want to say thank you to everyone, to you, Lizzie, to everyone for being part of this. We're so delighted to be doing this. And just a reminder that we're here every Sunday morning. This is part of big commitment that we're up to in Third Space. You can check out thirdspacecoaching.com if you're interested in all of that. And join us in our Facebook group. And we'll be here next Sunday morning at 9 o'clock UK time.
Thank you, everybody, for listening. And we wish you a very wonderful Sunday wherever you are in the world.
Bye-bye.